Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back. I'm Nancy Solomon, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. And now for some Jersey politics. This is the first time I've hosted the show, so I couldn't pass up the opportunity to talk politics with Matt Friedman. He's a reporter for Politico and the editor of its New Jersey Playbook. Hi, Matt. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Nancy.
The Playbook newsletter you edit is the first thing I read every morning.
Oh, glad to hear it.
Thank you very much. It's indispensable, and it's also a lot of fun. New Jersey politics is a reporter's dream, right?
I think so, yeah.
There is just so much wrong, and I never know whether to laugh or cry, really.
You have a lot of it to yourself as a reporter, too.
Yeah.
Well, we have a pretty healthy Trenton Press Corps. We're pretty overlooked, so it's a nice field to play on.
That is absolutely correct. The obvious place for us to start is Governor Phil Murphy. He's gotten off to a rocky start with Senate President Steve Sweeney. It all came to a head over the budget. Murphy wanted to raise the income tax on people who make more than $1 million a year. Sweeney didn't, and the stalemate lasted until hours before they would have had to shut down the government.
We want compromise. There's none been offered. It's been all one way. And his behavior is exactly like Chris Christie's, but he smiles more.
I am willing to compromise and always have been on what solutions we use. What I won't compromise on is the need for a real, sustainable solution.
So our colleagues, Charlie Stile at the Bergen Record and Tom Moran at the Star Ledger, say that Sweeney outmaneuvered Murphy in the recent budget deal. Do you agree?
That I would say yes, in terms of just that last statement Murphy said that you played, that he would not compromise on sustainable sources of revenue. Well, he did quite a bit. Murphy's budget relies on about half of what he wanted in terms of sustainable revenue. He wanted to raise taxes about $1.7 billion through recurring tax hikes, through raising the sales tax, the tax on millionaires. What he got instead was about $800 million of that is going to go away within the next 4 years, which leaves Sweeney holding the cards the next time they have to get down and do some budget negotiations for some serious programs that Phil Murphy wants. Yeah.
One of the other points that Charlie Stile made was that the political calendar is very difficult for a governor after this first year, which I found kind of surprising. I mean, really? Like 3 years and they can't get anything more done on raising revenue in the state? But I guess he was making the argument that next year there'll be a legislative election, and then 2 years out from the governor's reelection, it becomes more difficult. Is that how you read that?
Yeah, you know, the assembly was especially hesitant to raise the sales tax because they would have to run for reelection in 2019 on that. That's a pretty tough thing, especially, you know, the ghost of Jim Florio, what happened in 1991 when the Democrats were just swept out of the legislative majorities because of a series of tax hikes. I mean, three times the tax hikes of what Murphy originally even proposed. That still haunts Democrats to this day. They think about that. They think that taxes are an extraordinarily potent issue. Some of the thinking, a lot of people could argue, is a little outdated, but it still affects them. And that's a big reason why you're going to see a much harder time raising taxes going forward than this initial time, which was hard enough.
But you don't think that people like me who get walloped on our property taxes would actually support a millionaire's tax? That really Murphy was talking about taxing, you know, not the mass majority of the people in the state, but a very small group to raise a whole lot of money. You don't think that would go over well?
I don't think the millionaire's tax was so much politically problematic as raising the sales tax. Even if it was a half cent raise back to where it was just a couple years ago, and people won't really notice much of a difference in their pocketbooks, Republicans could still run on the fact that they're raising income tax. The way Republicans talk about the millionaire's tax is that you're raising income taxes, not you're raising taxes on incomes exceeding $1 million, not even on people who make more than $1 million, but on every dollar above $1 million. So it's still, in campaign literature, is simplified, but can still be called accurate in a way. And as far as the sales tax, I mean, that is a tax that hits everybody. including the lower and middle classes. So it is still a political problem, potentially.
And going back to the point you made a minute ago, that Murphy had promised and intended to raise a lot more revenue and had to accept much less for this annual budget. Is it possible that that was part of his strategy? Was he knew he was going to have to back off of some of these things, so he got half of what he wanted?
I'm sure he knew he would have to back off some of it. But it does look like in terms of what he got going forward in the next few years, it still does leave him coming back to Sweeney and having to work with the legislature for more. Sweeney has taken this anti-tax position now that's actually brand new. Now that he doesn't have a Republican governor to play off of, Steve Sweeney, who passed the millionaire's tax again and again and again, became its main opponent. He passed it when he knew it was going to get vetoed. Now he's its opponent. He's going on Fox News, Fox Business, talking about how we need a complete restructuring of the state. So in terms of going forward, Murphy and him, there's no question there's going to be more butting heads over this. It's going to be more tension. These two are still not getting along, despite what they said at their press conference when they finally got to a deal.
I'm Nancy Solomon, managing editor for New Jersey Public Radio, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Politico's Matt Friedman, who has covered New Jersey politics for many years. Listeners, what questions do you have about New Jersey politics? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. So let's stick with that thought. Steve Sweeney, proponent of the millionaire's tax, now has a Democratic governor who campaigned on a millionaire's tax. He rejects the idea. Explain what that's all about.
It's hard to explain because ostensibly, Steve Sweeney is taking the Trump tax plan, which hits New Jersey particularly hard by eliminating or reducing the cap on state and local tax deductions. So Steve Sweeney, the night Murphy got elected, or the next morning, I can't remember exactly which, said, the first thing I'm going to do is pass a millionaire's tax. But then as soon as the Trump tax plan came around, as soon as that passed, he started backpedaling on that. And he didn't just talk about that. He talked about actually doing something to tackle the state's property tax problem, which is a huge problem. And he's indicated that he believes going forward, he has hinted at, and a commission he put together has suggested, further cuts to public workers' retirement benefits, which is something that, Steve Sweeney back in 2011 teamed with Governor Christie enacted. They enacted quite significant cuts to pension and health benefits for public workers. So Sweeney's looking at more of that. Murphy is totally in the corner of the public sector unions. So that's once again an area where they're going to be at odds over the next few years here. And really what this comes down to is because Steve Sweeney maintains the legislature has to pass the budget. Steve Sweeney is the most powerful person in the legislature. The question is whether he's going to be a shadow governor here, whether he's really going to be the guy running the state, or whether Phil Murphy's going to be the guy running the state. Constitutionally, New Jersey has the most powerful governorship in the nation, but the Senate president's pretty powerful as well.
We have many calls on the line. We'll go to Brad in Manalapan. Hi, Brad. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Would you say that the compromise on the tax is really what's not being told? And that was Sweeney's introduction of legalized marijuana bill, which may be passed this summer and which would give a windfall in revenues to compensate on the state budget.
Good question.
Yeah, that is a good question. I think that it's still tough for marijuana. The way Sweeney, the Assembly Speaker, Craig Coughlin, is apparently in support of this now, which he hadn't been publicly in support of it before, and Governor Murphy has always been in support of this. They're talking about it like they really can get it done this summer, that they really can legalize marijuana. But if you talk to legislators, they're still not overwhelmingly opposed, but it's very hard to find a good number of legislators who are outright in favor. So it does show some room for movement. But was it a subterfuge for anything? No, I don't think so. We're talking ultimately the best, most optimistic revenue forecasts are about $300 million a year for this. Significant in terms of this budget, but still doesn't solve all the problems. And it still wouldn't be in this first year budget. It would have to be going forward. And knowing New Jersey, this program would take a long time to implement. It would be a long time before we're fully realizing the revenues. And frankly, if other states, if New York decides to do it, I don't know, Pennsylvania is a little more conservative, so it'll probably be a while before they do. But the more surrounding states do it, the less revenue you're going to be getting in New Jersey, because the less you're going to get people coming over here from those other states to get it. So it's really hard to say. And the $300 million is about as optimistic a revenue number as I've seen.
How much do you think the opposition to marijuana comes from, you know, a sort of policy position of just fearing what that would mean for the state of New Jersey in terms of public safety or drug addiction? And how much of it is just more, you know, we're talking about the politics of the budget when, you know, the fight was over the millionaire's tax, but really the fight was over power. And how much is this one going to become like the next way that the Democrats continue to kind of try to keep Murphy in his place?
I don't think that on marijuana, I think there's enough moneyed interests that want to get this done, that want to get it legalized, that on all sides, there's pretty much, on all sides of the people who are in power, there's agreement they want to get this done. So it's not going to be a way to box out Murphy. But in terms of what you're going to see and whether grassroots pro-marijuana activists are going to like the law that ultimately gets passed, I bet they're going to have a lot of problems with it. Now, I don't know. It remains to be seen what the social justice aspect of this is going to be and whether there will be any sort of reparation or, you know, special consideration given to minority neighborhoods in terms of how funds are distributed or in terms of, you know, where places are open and who can open them. But I do know that already there is basically no chance that there's going to be a provision in this law that allows people to grow their own marijuana. That's something that a lot of weed activists are really going to be upset about. It's just not going to happen as it stands. And I think legislators' reluctance to do this isn't really calculated. I think New Jersey, though we're considered a liberal state when it comes to a lot of social issues, we're usually not first out of the gate. I mean, look at gay marriage. It was only 2009 when the legislature could not pass gay marriage, 2009, before the issue had completely turned and the public, which had been relatively split on it, suddenly went into overwhelmingly in support of it. And then it wasn't really until a liberal state like New Jersey didn't get gay marriage until 2013. So these things take time, especially social issues like this. I don't see it happening very quickly, but they do say they want to do it in the summer. And if they get all that money interest behind it and everything, it is possible, but there's still a lot of opposition to it.
I think the most recent poll had it at what, 58 or 59% support?
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, poll after poll has shown significant public support for legalizing marijuana in New Jersey, but legislators are still scared about it.
Let's take another call. Alexis in Red Bank. Hi, Alexis, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm wondering how Sweeney is able to hold his leadership position for so long when he reflects the views that align more closely with Republicans, as he did with Christie. Why isn't he voted out of leadership? He's all the way down, I think, in Atlantic County. I mean, the majority of the state's population is up north. Why is this man allowed to wield so much power?
It's a great question, Alexis, and I would add for Matt to answer in addition to that question is to expand it out to, we saw a lot of Democratic county committee leaders, and these are really important positions in the state, who supported, endorsed Christie for re-election. There's been some churning and fighting in these Democratic committees about getting rid of that leadership because they supported Christie, which they saw as sort of treasonous. But it really hasn't happened. There hasn't been that much pushback against people like Joe DiVincenzo. And George Norcross. So how does it work that all of these guys get to stay in power?
Well, there's a myriad of reasons for Steve Sweeney. But just quick clarification, he's from Gloucester County, so the other side of South Jersey. But first of all, he has over 8 years built personal relationships with the 24 other Democratic senators. Some of them really owe him their seats in terms of him and George Norcross being able, in South Jersey especially, being able to spend millions and millions of dollars to help them keep those seats. And that money has also flowed into the north of New Jersey, into Bergen County, all over the place. Millions of dollars helping people win re-election through super PACs connected to George Norcross, who was an insurance broker who's very, you know, powerful in the state and is Steve Sweeney's close personal friend. You have money, you have relationships, even, you know, liberal lawmakers like Loretta Weinberg, who is really the foremost progressive legislator in the state, has been very closely aligned with Steve Sweeney, despite him being on the more conservative side of the Democratic Party for years. So personal relationships and money, most of all. But and the way the thing is structured, I don't think a lot of people are worried about hearing from their constituents that they need to oust Steve Sweeney. Now, we did have an effort to oust him led by the teachers union. It was really bizarre in a lot of ways because you had the state's largest teachers union, the New Jersey Education Association, funding a pro-Trump Republican who was running against Sweeney, spending millions of dollars through a super PAC in order to try to oust Sweeney. Sweeney wound up winning by, if not the largest margin in his history of elections, one of them. I think it was 17 points. So he came off actually stronger after this last election, after there was an attempt by some on the left working with the right to try to oust him.
What do you make of, you mentioned George Norcross, who for folks in North Jersey, it's kind of, he's sort of this unknowable character that people don't quite understand the power that he wields, that he controls the largest voting bloc in the legislature of South Jersey legislators. But what do you make of Murphy's lack of relationship with George Norcross? Because I'm of two minds. I mean, on the one hand, you know, it's been said many times by those of us in the chattering classes that without making friends with Sweeney and Norcross, he's not going to get anything done. But at the same time, he's showing a little bit of maybe some resistance, like, no, he's not going to play politics as usual, and he's going to stick with his stand and not bow to this political interest, this power block. How do you shake down on this? What do you make of it?
It was a point of pride, if you talk to people in the Murphy administration, that Phil Murphy did not, during budget negotiations, call George, make an appointment to go down to his offices in Marlton, New Jersey, in South Jersey, and kiss the ring. This is something governors have done again and again and again. Murphy purposely did not. He said, I think it's pretty well known that the way he talks about George Norcross is he's one of his 9 million constituents. But Norcross does, along with Steve Sweeney, control a huge block of votes in South Jersey, and pretty much any Democratic priority is going to need those votes. So he still has immense power, whether Phil Murphy wants to go through him or not, and whether directly or indirectly he's going to have to deal with George Norcross. A lot of people snarked back at me when I mentioned that there was that Phil Murphy's administration was prideful that he didn't contact George, and they said, if you look at the budget deal that he got, maybe he should have. Maybe he could have done better. But there is certainly an attempt to exert some independence. Under Governor Christie, though he was a Republican, George Norcross just was practically an equal partner in that administration. They're still finding their footing in terms of how this relationship is going to go. Right now, there isn't much of a relationship at all. I talked to George Norcross last week, and he did not badmouth Murphy. In fact, he called him a gentleman. He just badmouthed every single person in Phil Murphy's inner circle. So that's, you know, read into that what you will. I'll have more on that later.
Listeners, what questions do you have about New Jersey politics? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And we did have a call, it looks like we lost him, who wanted to know about plastic bag legislation and whether we're going to see that in New Jersey, having to pay for your plastic bags at the grocery checkout.
Sure, this is not an issue I personally covered, but I've read the coverage of it. There's things you hear here and there. But based on a story from my own website, Danielle Moyo, my understanding is that the governor is unlikely to sign a bill. I don't know whether it will be a veto or a conditional veto. He's unlikely to sign a bill that was recently passed that would instate a 5-cent tax, basically, or surcharge, whatever you want to call it, on paper and plastic bags. The thinking is that Murphy, it's not that he's opposed to this so much as that he may be more in line with environmentalists who want a complete ban on plastic bags.
So the Politico Playbook newsletter that you edit and write headlines for every morning, It compiles all the news stories, the big stories from New Jersey, and it's a quick, and you give a quick synopsis of each story, usually with a funny headline and a bit of commentary. Usually there is just a litany of various forms of corruption involving local government, patronage jobs, no-show jobs, public officials who are paid a crazy amount of money for their job. My favorite was the $600,000 for the attorney in Lakewood, mm-hmm. small town attorney. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the arrests of elected officials for bribery. That's pretty much a regular. How do you think about all of this? Like, why is there so much corruption in New Jersey?
I'll go with the easy answer here. 565 municipalities, various independent, quasi-public authorities, utility authorities, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many public officials and so much opportunity. And frankly, you know, with that many towns, with the media not being extremely, you know, big in the state, caught between the New York and Philadelphia media markets, there's just a lot of opportunity, and in a lot of cases, not a lot of oversight, especially in the smaller towns. I think, you know, the Asbury Park Press in Lakewood does a good job covering that, but that's actually, Lakewood, you mentioned, it was a small town. It's not really a small town anymore because of the growth in the, you know, Orthodox Jewish population.
But 600,000 a year,
right,
for the town attorney?
And if you look at Lakewood, I mean, it's just, if there could be a bigger spotlight on that town, I'm sure we'd know quite a bit more. It's one thing after another in New Jersey. It's just, I think honestly that it's so much government, and it's hard for people to keep track of that. And there's a lot of people honestly who live in New Jersey whose heads are in New York or Philadelphia. They work there. They're there most of the day. New Jersey's where they lay their heads, and it can be hard to keep track of these things.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, the stations of New York and New Jersey Public Radio. I've got tons of more questions for you, but I think we're going to run out of time, and I really want to talk about Senator Robert Menendez. Mm. You covered the trial pretty much gavel to gavel, right?
Yeah, pretty much every day.
When you're talking with your friends, like, what did you learn at that trial that just surprises you the most and surprises you, it was the most, you know, the thing that surprises you that nobody significant primaried Menendez and that he got a walk basically on his primary election, which we could talk about also. But, you know, what's the detail from that trial that just you feel people don't know about or understand about Robert Menendez?
I think when people look at the trial and they kind of think he's skated, and I think you can go read the letter from the ethics committee, bipartisan, you know, not a majority on that committee, that found that Menendez, they said he broke the law, probably in terms of filing his reports poorly and accepting gifts he shouldn't have accepted. What I found about the trial that I was surprised about, and that most of the other reporters were surprised about too, was that not that Bob Menendez looked innocent or great, but how weak the federal government's case was in terms of trying to prove that he accepted bribes in return for political favors. They never made the connection the whole time. And I remember just, you know, chatting with the other reporters in the room, and we were just like, wow, like, that's what they've got? Like, this is, we could all kind of, I think we sensed that it was coming to a mistrial pretty much from pretty early on in that trial.
Why do you think the entire Democratic establishment of New Jersey came out and endorsed Menendez and there wasn't a serious primary challenge? I mean, the woman who ran against him ended up with 38%, which is pretty decent for someone completely unknown in politics.
And if it's the Menendez has always had a very strong grip on the Democratic machine in Hudson County, which is very powerful in terms of Democratic politics and has very strong relationships with Democratic leaders throughout the state. His primary challenger, actually, if you look at the numbers, she did best in states, in counties in New Jersey that were actually more Republican than Democratic, that don't have a strong Democratic machine. Frankly, that was a protest vote by the grassroots Democrats against Menendez. It's true. If there had been a legitimate primary challenger, I don't think anyone quite estimated how angry this protest vote, you know, how angry a lot of Democrats were about this. But I think Democrats are also counting on the fact that, like, those people aren't going to go vote for a Republican in November.
So you're not seeing any big surprises in November with Menendez?
You know, if his Republican opponent is running as a, Bob Hugin, is running as a moderate, just came out, he said he thinks, you know, basically in the code for he believes, you know, the Supreme Court should maintain Roe v. Wade now with the new pick and everything by saying that the pick should respect precedent. But the fact is he has a million ties to Donald Trump. He's praised him. He's given hundreds of thousands of dollars to help get him elected. He's got lots of ties to Chris Christie. He's not going to be able to shake those. It's a big problem this November in this Democratic state.
Let's squeeze in one last call. We have Grace in Mattawan. Hi, Grace.
Yes, good morning. Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been listening quite attentively today, and I've heard so many other reports about legalizing marijuana in the state. I'm coming from a different place. I feel as though the only reason it's being looked at is to generate income. And I think that it's being short-sighted. My background is a substance abuse counselor. I also know about the amount of money that's been spent since my children were little, even in schools, trying to get them to stop smoking. I know what lung cancer does. I see the commercials on television constantly. Marijuana is much worse when ingested than tobacco. And I think that what we're seeing is a total inability to see the future, that all of the revenue that we think we're getting is going to be spent in the future on taking care of all the people who have lung disease. The other thing is that it absolutely does change brain function. So now we're going to addict a whole group of people again. Not that they haven't been using it, but because it wasn't so readily available, it isn't used by everyone. I think once you say it's legal, then people think, oh, then it's fine. We can go and use it just like I can go and buy a beer. Yes, people do get addicted to alcohol. But this is not only very physically a problem for people, but it also will, you know, people say, no, it's not a gateway drug. Well, that was not what I saw when I worked. That was not my background in seeing that. It was a gateway drug, particularly with young people. They started when they went to college with marijuana, and then it went on from there. They self-medicated with marijuana. When they wanted to get off Ritalin, they used it. I saw kids in treatment for that. They would sell their Ritalin, and they'd use the money to buy marijuana. It has a lot of side effects. It has a lot of social effect. And I really think we've been very short-sighted in taking a look at that and only in the revenue that it could produce.
Okay, thank you, Grace. And, you know, I will say, as a parent, I have concerns. But I also know that when my son was in high school, it was easier for him to buy marijuana than it was to go get alcohol, which
I would agree
is
with
regulated.
That. In my high school as well. This is the 1990s we're talking about. So yeah, it was definitely easier to get marijuana than alcohol. So I don't really see that connection. I think we talk about the revenue, we tend to leave off the fact that there's also a, you know, for-profit industry of drug treatment centers that make a lot of money off people being sent there for marijuana. And I think that there's been lots of talk about health effects, many with studies that are not exactly universally accepted among scientists about it being a gateway drug or it being, I heard the word addiction there. Let's just put it this way. Any you can form substance off any habit. The overwhelming scientific evidence does not show that marijuana is addictive.
That's all the time we have for now. Matt Friedman is a reporter and editor with Politico New Jersey. Thanks for coming in, Matt.
All right, thank you.